Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles and investment ideas from Tom, me and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters.
This week in the markets, all eyes are on interest rates as central banks meet on either side of the Atlantic and in Japan. Well, interest rates have lost some of their capacity to move markets, but central bank policy remains a key driver of share prices. Investors have long accepted that we've reached peak rates in the current tightening cycle and that the next move is down, in the English-speaking world anyway. What remains unclear is the timing of the first cut. This week sees rate decisions from the Federal Reserve, Bank of England and the Bank of Japan. The first two central banks are likely to sit on their hands again, as they wait for clear evidence that inflation is under control. In the case of the Bank of England, it will be the fifth no-change meeting in a row after 14 consecutive rises from the end of 2021. In Japan, meanwhile, the question is when interest rates start to head the other way. Japan is an outlier among the world's central banks in its persistence with negative interest rates. But that's a position that's becoming more difficult to sustain as inflation nudges higher, fueled recently by the most generous pay negotiation round in years. What has narrowed significantly recently is the gap in expectations between the financial markets and the central banks. In the US in particular, investors have started to fall in line with the Fed's view that it will cut rates just three times this year, rather than the six or so that they were expecting only a few months ago. Last week's unexpected tick up in the rate of inflation cemented that more cautious view. The rise to 3.2% last month highlighted the challenge faced by the Fed in the so-called last mile of the fight against rising prices. Economists had expected inflation to remain unchanged at 3.1%, and the nudge higher triggered warnings that rates in the US may have to stay higher for longer than hoped. The US, like the UK, has a 2% inflation target, and getting there from the current level could prove difficult in the face of a strong jobs market, where unemployment remains low by historic standards, even if it too has started to edge higher. The US economy continues to create more jobs than economists expect. Until now, the narrative has focused on the positive soft landing outcome, whereby inflation is overcome without undue damage to the economy from higher interest rates. The concern is now that growing inflation may be more persistent in a stronger than expected economic recovery from the pandemic. Although it's hard to prove, it does seem probable that central banks are concerned not to repeat the mistakes of earlier inflationary cycles, when they called the all clear too soon and allowed price rises to become entrenched. The 1970s were characterized by an apparent victory over inflation that reverted to a second inflation spike. What's interesting from an investment perspective is the way in which good news on the economy is starting to become good news for investors too. For some time, bad economic news has been seen as a prelude to falling interest rates and so welcomed by investors in a way that sometimes seems perverse to people unfamiliar with the way financial markets work. So it's an important shift in sentiment that chimes with the broadening out of the bull market from its narrow tech stock leadership to a wider market rally. Another key factor in the timing of the first interest rate cut is the upcoming presidential election. Although central banks are nominally independent of politicians, it's unusual for a central bank to start cutting interest rates very close to an election, which argues slightly for a first cut in the summer rather than the autumn. A similar calculus applies here in the UK, although unlike in America, the timing of the election is uncertain because there's no fixed schedule and it's up to the Prime Minister to decide when to go to the polls, except that the election must be held before January next year due to the 5-year term limit on a parliament. Here too, inflation has fallen rapidly from its peak of more than 11% in late 2022 to just 4%. But that's still twice the Bank of England's target, and wage inflation remains stubbornly higher than the headline rate. Although inflation is expected to fall rapidly through the spring on the back of lower energy bills, sticky wage inflation will make the last mile tough over here too. As it happens, the UK reports on inflation this week, just a day before the Bank of England's rate-setting announcement. Inflation is forecast to fall to a two-and-a-half-year low of 3.5% from 4% in January, as lower food and goods inflation pushes price rises lower even before household gas and electricity bills get cheaper in April. Looking more broadly at markets, the rally that got underway last autumn and surprised many by carrying on in earnest in the first few months of 2024 keeps pushing higher. The S&P 500 index at 5,117 is now 46% higher than the October 2022 low. That's not excessive by the standards of earlier bull markets, so the gain is not of itself a cause for concern. Slightly more so is the rise in valuations from around 15 times earnings at that October 22 low point to 21 today. With interest rates now thought unlikely to provide too much of a tailwind this year, earnings will need to start coming through in order to bring valuation multiples back to a less stretched level. The good news is that they're doing so. Estimates are holding up well for 2024 and 2025, with high single-digit or low double-digit gains penciled in for both years. Standing back to see the longer-term picture, this bull market is starting to look quite long in the tooth. Share prices bottomed out in 2009 after the financial crisis, and with some volatility along the way, they've now been rising for 15 years. That's still shy of the 18 years that share prices rose between 1982 and 2000, but it is getting there. In baseball speak, we're probably in the seventh or the eighth inning of a nine-inning match. That, of course, is the US market, and while it's far and away the dominant stock market in the world, it's not the only one. And elsewhere, investors march to a different beat. Here in the UK, for example, the stock market is valued much more cheaply than in the US, at around 11 times earnings rather than over 20. With the economic and political situation looking much more stable than it has for nearly a decade since Brexit, there's a strong argument that the UK could see some catch-up. Another market which was very cheap and now looks a bit less so, but which has momentum on its side, is Japan. Here, the story is focused on the benefits of governance reforms and a more market-friendly corporate backdrop than's been the case in earlier years. The Japanese market recently cleared its 1989 peak and also seems to have the force with it. A market that has definitely not benefited from positive momentum is China, but here too, things are starting to look better. One of the reasons that investors have shied away from Chinese shares in recent years has been the country's struggle to emerge from COVID restrictions with the kind of robust economic growth that we enjoyed in the West as we came out of the pandemic. But this week, we've started to see some green shoots of recovery, with a 7% rise in industrial production, well above the 5% penciled in by economists. Any sign that China is getting over a period of deflation, low consumer confidence, and a property credit crunch could be the trigger for overseas investors to reconsider what is one of the world's cheapest major markets.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.